welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. And today we're back with another of the season preview in podcast series. And we're going to be talking about a team that's been much discussed over the offseason, not very positively most of the time, and that is the Sacramento Kings. And in order to discuss the Sacramento Kings, I'm going to bring on the biggest Sacramento Kings fan that I know, Josh Hayes from Fantasy Hoops Insider Podcast and RotoWire and Pro Football Focus. Josh, how you going?
Very good, sir. Very good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. It's good to finally have you on the show. Now, I did fill in for you on your podcast at one stage a month or so ago. Me and Matt Smith took over for you and Moses on there, and that was a big honor. So I do thank you for getting onto your show and ploughing our Aussie accents through all your listeners.
Yeah, definitely great to have you guys on. That's probably the first and last time we're going to have you on, because we want to hold on to our jobs. and I don't know when we're going to have you back on, to be honest with you, but you guys did an excellent job and I got some great feedback. There's a lot of downloads. So enjoy it while it lasted, because I don't know if I can put you back on the show again.
No, I understand that completely. Got to protect your territory.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, Josh, where can everybody find you on Twitter if they want to interact and find your show?
The easiest way to find me right now is on Twitter at @JoshHayesFS, because everything that runs through Fantasy Hoops Insider, Fantasy Football Insider, Fantasy Baseball Insider, and the stuff that I'm running for hosting for RotoWire and for Pro Football Focus, I'll all tweet out there. So I usually check that account before all the rest. But as far as hoops goes, a lot of stuff happening always as Fantasy Hoops Insider. Right now, obviously, we're in the off season, but you know, we're ramping up here with training camps right around the corner here, some preseason, a lot of Vegas preseason action, by the way, too. So there's some, I guess, the Kings Lakers at MGM. I believe the Clippers or Nuggets are going to play again at Mandalay Bay. And then there'll be some, I think the Suns are going to be playing over at the Thomas Mack Center there as well. So a lot of NBA action in Vegas, even though there isn't a team out here in Vegas.
Are you going to be going to any of those games?
Probably not.
it is preseason.
I would actually love to, but I'm working 17 jobs right now. Yep. So anybody listening wants to hire me full time and give me a 9-to-5 gig so I can make these games that aren't actually during my shift, then I would love to go. I feel like the biggest hypocrite in the world, because the Kings come to my employer at the MGM Grand and I'm over here working in another department. I'm like, oh, I wonder how that game's going. It's probably awesome.
You might be able to bump into Vivek out in the lobby or on one of the tables or something like that. He might come and throw some money down on where you're working.
Not if he has those goggles on that he was pictured wearing. I don't think, and he might bump into me, but I don't know if I'll bump into him. But That's true. So it'll be great to meet him. Actually, I want to quickly ask about what you've got going on, because you got some pretty big news going on here. You're over at Basketball Monster. Right now, you and I both started at RotoWire at the same time, but it seems like you've moved on to, I guess in addition to bigger and greener pastures. So you tell me, I'm gonna interview you on your own show here. Okay. Tell us, Josh, about Basketball Monster and all the good things that are happening there and what you have going on.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Yes, I am. I am working now at Basketball Monster. So you'll see these podcasts. You know, I'm going to be talking about Basketball Monster during them. But there's a lot going on over there. If you don't know what it is, go ahead and look at it. It's basketballmonster.com. Basically, there's a whole heap of stuff: projections over there, drafting tools, ability to analyze teams. I'm going to have articles go up there. There's a really active forum message board. There's a whole heap of tools basically to run your team and to work out your team's balance, where you've got strengths and weaknesses, other teams in your league, where their strengths and weaknesses are. The draft tracker is amazing over there as well. And I'm really excited to be working there, because I've been a fan of Basketball Monster for quite a while, and I think a lot of people listening to this would know of Basketball Monster, and it's just an awesome opportunity to go and work over there now.
Yeah, I think we've been ripping off their head-to-head schedule there for the last couple seasons there, and using that as a reference on Fantasy Hoops and Sire. So we appreciate the free information over at Basketball Monster, and now maybe we can use Josh Lloyd as our hack to get some more fantasy goodness over there. And so I'm assuming that's season-long and DFS. Am I correct over at Basketball Monster?
Yes, yeah, they do season-long stuff and the daily stuff as well. So each day there's, you know, daily projections and suggestions and prices and all the, through all their software runs, all that sort of stuff as well, plus for season long stuff. There's a whole heap of information over there. It's really fantastic. I'm not just saying that. I'm not just saying that because I work there.
Yeah, just send me a promo code or something like that. You know what I mean? a free 2-year trial or something like that, and then I'll be sure to definitely check that out. So yeah, much congratulations to you though. They do great stuff. I believe the person who runs Basketball Monster used to be with Yahoo Sports. If I'm correct, am I right in saying that?
Well, the guy who used to do that, which is Matt Buser, he doesn't work at Basketball Monster anymore. I've taken his place over there.
You sent Matt Buser to the curb. Well,
I don't think that's what happened. He left, and I took the opening. I didn't kick him out or anything like that. Nothing nefarious going on.
I prefer to look at it as Matt Buser was coming down the lane, and you just straight up tumbled him to the streets, and now that's your job. So, congratulations to you. Very nice.
Thank you.
We get credit for a shot block and a turnover because the ball went out of bounds.
That's boosting my fantasy stats. That's the only stats I've gotten all season, so I'm happy about that. Good start. Let's talk Kings now, Josh. You ready?
Okay.
Now you are a Kings fan. Not a huge amount of them out in the media. So I think you're the best person to talk about this team. And we heard a lot about this team, not necessarily for the right reasons, although some people will go out and tell you, you know, that the no publicity, or what is it? Bad publicity is good. Any publicity is good publicity. That's what I'm trying to get out.
No such thing as bad publicity.
That's the one I'm trying to say. And they were all over the news, free agency, trades, mainly for bad trades and missed free agents and all that sort of stuff. We're going to talk on all of that. But do you see this team now as being better than last season?
I think yes, from like a talent standpoint, but not as much as they had hoped. They were basically trying to go all in on Wesley Matthews there, and they had to trade a pick and get rid of Stauskas and empty out a lot of their roster depth in order to create the possibility of signing Wesley Matthews. And they even upped their offer. They added a year, and I think were another maybe $8 million on top of the Dallas offer. And Wesley Matthews still decided to take less to go with Dallas there. So that sort of failed overall. But having said that, I think that there is a talent upgrade in Rajon Rondo. Despite the fact that Darren Collison had a great season, but there's definitely some question marks with him coming off the hip and the abdominal muscle injury there. But you take a look at Rajon Rondo, Kostas Kufos, Willie Cauley-Stein, the draft pick, and Marco Bellinelli added to the roster. And I feel like they've, at least from a, you know, 8-man, 9-man rotation standpoint, have definitely upgraded in terms of talent. Can they compete in the West? I think they can win more games. I don't know if they can even crack 500 with this roster because the West is so ridiculously deep. But from a talent perspective, I think they're going to be a lot closer to competing with some of the top teams in their own conference.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way of looking at it. They're going to be better. They're going to be more competitive, but it's probably not going to mean anything in the long run because it's not going to mean them getting a playoff spot. The moves that they made don't necessarily give them a great building block for the future, like with the guys that they added. We'll go through the guys they added. There's a big list here. Quincy Acey, Marco Bellinelli, Caron Butler, Seth Curry was signed, Kostas Kufos, and Rajon Rondo. We know Rondo's on a 1-year deal. Bellinelli's not the youngest of guys, not old or anything. Kostas Kufos is an okay backup on a good team, probably a backup big man that plays 20 to 25 minutes, but probably not a starting caliber guy in the playoffs. And all these guys, they're okay. They're probably an upgrade, but they're not taking the team to the next level where they go. This is going to be a team in 2 to 3 years. It'll be a top 4 team in the West because these guys, Rondo might not be there. We don't see, you know, Caron Butler's not growing. Marco Bellinelli's not getting better, probably. Quincy Acey is what he is. Seth Curry's not going to become something. We might, but it's unlikely. These are just moves that will make them more competitive this season, but it doesn't really mean much for the future. That's the way I view it anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you there. This is, to me, going to be like a huge test for how good of a coach George Karl really is, because he's worked wonders in a lot of different spots with varying amounts of talent, but I think he's never faced this amount of competition in his own division and his own conference that he has right now. Now, the couple things that he has going for them is he's got the best center in the game.
Yep.
In mind, Marcus Cousins. I don't care what anybody says about Marcus Gasol. Okay, Marcus Gasol does not deserve to be first team All NBA at the center position. Are you with me on that? Over to Marcus Cousins.
I'm a huge DeMarcus Cousins fan. I think that he is the best center in the NBA as well. I would have had him for some reason. He's just always looked down upon by media or even just the whole All Star thing. Like I don't. He was a clear All Star to me. I don't understand why he wasn't. Yeah, it took him for guys to pull out for him to get in. He is incredible to me. But there's obviously something that goes. We know that he's had issues with behavior and not necessarily discipline, but just his way of interacting with people. And you can see, to me, it looks like that it rubs people the wrong way and they hold it against him when voting for these things. That they're going
absolutely. You have a lot of media members voting there, and he's rubbed people in the media, and his portrayal of, the amount of coaches that he sort of run out of town, and Paul Westphal, and not getting along with Keith Smart, and sort of infighting, and then throwing a huge hissy fit when the management fired Mike Malone, which was the first coach that he actually got along with, and played as hard as possible for, and then you saw him just doing ridiculous stuff like bring the ball up court time after time, like a point guard, and jacking threes when they put who is the interim coach?
Ty Corbin.
Ty Corbin. Yeah, when Ty Corbin take over, he had no control over DeMarcus Cousins there. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this team. I think 500 is a victory for in terms of what you can expect. That would probably put them a good, 7, 8, 9 wins over last year's total. I would probably say, home run, best possible case scenario is like miraculously snap off an 8 seed. So, and that's like, you're going to need other teams in the West to suffer major injuries, people to sell off pieces to the East in trades and other things like that to sort of happen in order for them to get in there. They've got a competitive roster, but I just don't know if they have enough top tier talent that plays together in order for them to make serious noise in the West.
Let's talk about these guys that have arrived on this team. We won't talk about all of them because not all of them have much relevance in terms of fantasy, but a couple of them do. Marco Bellinelli came across from the Spurs, one of the guys who actually decided to sign with the Kings. Now, his role, a lot of people thinking he's going to slide in, he's going to get 30 minutes a night. I don't think that's going to be the case at all. I think he plays a similar role to what he played in San Antonio. He plays off the bench, he plays as a backup two behind Ben McLemore. He plays a little bit maybe at the three, perhaps, but it's not going to be a huge role. I've got him, Basketball Monster currently got him projected at 25 minutes a game. I don't think he's going to be a good fantasy option. Do you think something different? Is he going to play a bigger role? Do they bring him in for more than what I'm anticipating?
Are we talking about Marco Bellinelli here?
Marco Bellinelli.
Yeah, so for me, I think that you're right on with the projection. We're looking at 18 to 22, maybe 25 at the most per game. And I think he's sort of, and I wrote about this in the RotoWire projections for the Sacramento Kings. So if you take a look at the RotoWire by chance and you pull up any of these guys like DeMarcus Cousins or Marco Bellinelli, I wrote the 2015 player outlook for these guys. And what I said with Bellinelli is that he's, best case scenario, he's a threat to Ben McLemore in terms of maybe potentially snapping off that two-guard position. If he falls out flat on his face and he doesn't improve the way that they're hoping Ben McLemore should improve year in year three, and he did make strides from year one to year two. So, I mean, that's probably not the best, the most likeliest of scenarios. But, there has been some injury issues that Rudy Gay has experienced there, so he can play some of the three, and they've lost a lot of their bench shooting, removing Nick Stauskas off the roster there as well. So he can be a spot-up three-point shooter that comes in, with the second unit and maybe plays towards the end of the games when they need some three-point shooting there. I just don't see a bigger role than 25 minutes per game for him personal. But they do have he does fill a gap because basically their best player off the bench was Omri Caspi, and they're going to need more than that if they're going to be able to compete at all this season.
He's a guy whose value is basically tied to his ability to hit threes. He's never had a season where he's hit 2 3-pointers a game, but that's mainly been limited to minutes. Four of the last 5 seasons, he's hit over 2 threes per 36 minutes, which he's not going to play 36 minutes, but he can contribute a little bit in that area, but he doesn't do anything else. He's not a help in steals. He doesn't get rebounds.
Defensive liability. Assists.
Yeah. He doesn't shoot a good percentage. He shot 42% last season. He had a massive year with the Spurs when they won the title where he shot 49%, but the years before that were 40, 42, 44, not good shooting. But he does offer some free throws, but it's on such limited attempts at 1.6 that it's not a big impact. So to me, he's not someone that I think that you should be looking at in standard leagues. We're going to talk about McLemore a little bit later. But Bellinelli, I think that the hype is, or any sort of hype that there is probably a little bit unwarranted. What about Rondo? He's coming across. He signed a one-year deal. We think he's going to be the starting point guard. That would what we'd assume. We've got to have a lot of discussion on Rondo later with some questions for some listeners. But just your overall thoughts on Rondo now, from a fantasy point of view, how he fits with his team. What did you think of the signing as a fan?
I think it was like they were sort of forced into signing Rondo after they missed out on Wesley Matthews. They didn't necessarily need to sign Rondo, but for whatever reason, management has been very high on Rajon Rondo. Now, Rajon Rondo goes against everything that I hate in a point guard in terms of fantasy and in real life, which is can't shoot, you know, a liability on the offensive end because at this stage in his career, with as many seasons, I believe this is his eighth year, I'm not totally sure. It's been in the league more than 6-7 years for sure.
Yeah.
And you shoot that sort of percentage from the free throw line and from three. It just goes to show me that you aren't a player that works hard on your game in the off season. I hate those kind of guys. You should be getting better every single year. And that's one thing you got to love about DeMarcus Cousins is he plugged holes in his game. He knew that he was a bad percentage shooter as a center or a power forward. And when he was like, you know, his first season or two in the league, when he was shooting 43%, and I was like, I can't draft this guy in my fantasy leagues because he's a monster in all these categories, but he takes way too many bad shots. Then when he realized he could just destroy people in the paint and get, you know, closer to the 48%, 49% range, then while improving his free throw percentage, clearly what Rondo hasn't been doing, working on his game, that's a person I can definitely get on board with and back and love. And Rondo does not do any of that. Now, on the flip side of that, he's a former All-Star, and there's a reason for that. He definitely has talent, and I think that he's going to get the keys to the car. I think it's definitely an uptick in potential value for DeMarcus Cousins. I'm not sure if it's going to hurt Rudy Gay or help Rudy Gay. The one thing I will say about Rajon Rondo is the single best thing that he does, which is at an elite level, is distribute the basketball and find good open shots for his teammates there. I don't know how he necessarily does it when you're basically can play 4-on-5 defense against him. You can just lay off Rondo all day and he still won't take the jumper. I was watching him play in Boston before they traded him. And I was like, this guy has a dribble, 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 boom, penetrate. Wow. He created some open shot for somebody. I don't know how, but he finds a way to get into the lane or to move the ball or to move himself or the offensive positionally to get other teams really good shots. And that's why you've seen him in seasons past lead the league in assists. And he's one of the few people you can say has potential to get double digits assists in the league. I think there's less than 10 of those players in the league, maybe less than 5.
Yeah. I would say it's probably less than 5. Now, I don't think he's going to get back to double digit assists. And you're right. From a fantasy point of view, he's not a good target. He provides decent assist numbers, but even that dropped last season down to less than 8. His steal numbers have dropped as well. Like, he used to be a guy where you could get, you know, 2 steals a game a couple of years ago. That wasn't the case. He was only at 1.3 last season. He rebounds well, and that's been consistent, and that's good. Like, you know, 5.5 rebounds is really good for a point guard. But when that's your only other skill, really, than getting assists, it doesn't cut it. And then when you shoot 40% from the free throw line, that's horrible, especially when it's... Now, I don't expect him to be back to shooting 40% from the line. His previous seasons, they're all horrible, but 63, 65, 60, that's a significant chunk better than 40. So I imagine that it doesn't necessarily stay at 40, but it's never going to become good. He's not going to become a three-point shooter, although his three-point shots, he made half a three a game. He made 1 3 a game the year before. He can sort of hit them, not necessarily well, but he's left so wide open that eventually he's going to just drop in a three a game or half three a game or 0.7 or something like that. So it's going to be a minuscule impact from what he can do there. But overall, he's overrated. Look, he has been overrated until this season. I think that this season he's probably going to go in the right spot. But you've got to be wary that especially if you're in a nine-category league, the turnovers are going to hurt a lot. And you've got to be able to absorb those bad percentages. And because he doesn't take a huge amount of shot, it's a little bit easier to absorb. Like, he only took one free throw a game last year. So even though it's 40% and it's bad, it's not like 40% at five attempts like a DeAndre Jordan or Andre Drummond. So it is recoverable, but you do have to build the rest of your team around it. And if you haven't thought about that at the start and got these high free throw guys, and then you get to round 10 and Rondo's there and you grab him, well, then it doesn't work out, because you've dropped it down. But if you have built up a really high free throw percentage and you go, look, my free throw percentage is currently sitting at 84% for my team, then you can then you can afford a Rondo in round 10 and go, that's great, I'll take his 8 assists, I'll take his 1.5 steals, and it won't actually impact my free throw. Because we say this all the time, Josh, when we're talking fantasy stuff, it doesn't matter if you win free throw percentage 85-75, it doesn't matter. You could win 80-75, you could win 79-75, and if you've just got a massive excess in one stat, there's no point to it. So if you have built it up, then you can afford that hit that takes you down from 85-82, and that's not a problem at all.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there as well. And you do sort of have to treat Rajon Rondo like you've rostered Dwight Howard or Shaq back in the day and say, hey, if I don't have a strong free throw percentage in the rest of my lineup or the rest of my categories there, this guy that's going to probably do more damage than help you overall. Having said that, he's on a one-year deal, and he's torpedoed himself out of Boston, and he's ran himself out of town with Rick Carlisle, forcing him out of the lineup during the playoffs for the Dallas Mavericks here. And the Kings wanted to give him more than a one-year deal, and he didn't want to take it. So he thought that he was going to take this one-and-done deal and sort of rebuild his value. So this could be it for Rondo in terms of fantasy relevancy and being a player who has a shot at a big-time contract. So I don't think he can be any more motivated this season in terms of raising his level of play back to where at least it once was in 2015-16. Than any other time. So you should see the best version of Rondo, hopefully, given the circumstances. And I don't think Darren Collison is necessarily a threat to him overall. Like what Darren Collison did last year, George Karl has mentioned Darren Collison playing alongside him, as a two-guard lineup there. I think that'll probably happen in some spots, but I'm not necessarily buying it a ton because that would stunt McLemore's growth. And I also don't think that you bring in Rajon Rondo to have him back up Darren Collison at $9.5 million, so or $10 million or whatever it was. So I think that you can sort of take the numbers that happened in Dallas, set those aside, assume that he should have an uptick in production, and then sort of decide where he fits in between the Boston numbers and the Sacramento Kings numbers. But he's got to be more motivated than ever if he really wants one more big contract in his career.
The thing we have to remember about Rondo as well, we can talk about the motivation for a contract, but he was in the same situation last season. And he was playing for a contract. He was an unrestricted free agent. He was playing for a big payday, and he got worse. So, yeah, you can say he is doing that this year, and maybe it's a case of, look, oh, I stuffed it up last year, this is a second chance for me, I've got to be able to do it. But it's not, look, it happened last year and then it didn't motivate him at all. He was significantly worse in pretty much every single statistical category when he was playing for a contract. So that's something to keep in mind with him as well. Costa Kufos.
Yeah.
I really like Costa Kufos. I like him a lot. He's interesting player.
He's got a good haircut.
Is that what it's? I don't know if it's a haircut. It's more just like working with what he's got.
As am
I. he needs to go full Josh Hayes though, and just get rid of it all. Just go. I'm done with it. Instead of just leaving some wispy bits floating around the back, like just forming a nice donut towards the back of his head, he needs to just get rid of it all and go, I'm done. And he needs to go more Josh Hayes than Manu Ginobili. That's the way I'd be looking anyway.
All right, fair enough. I like it.
But fantasy-wise, what are we going to expect from Kufos? Now, he was always a really decent guy in Memphis. Whenever there was an injury to Gasol or Randolph and he'd come in and have to play minutes, you know what you were going to get from Kufos. You'd get reliable on-court production. You'd get steady but not spectacular fantasy numbers. Do we think that he's going to start in Sacramento? I personally do think that he will start for at least the beginning of the season. Do you think that they'll start him, or do you think that they'll go in there and throw Willie Cauley-Stein in as the starter to start the season off? Or will they go with a different situation where they could all go Rudy Gay at the three, Omri Caspi at the four, and Cousins at the five?
I do not think that Omri Caspi starts. I think that he's most valuable off the bench, that despite the fact that he played very, very well.
He was amazing last year when Gay was out. Yeah,
Cousins and Gay went out of the lineup. He really flashed some talent there. But he's one of the classic, like, good players on a bad team. You know, he plays his heart out. I love Omri Caspi, but he's an eight-man rotational player. And he could start for somebody, but, you know, all things considered, he's definitely best left playing right behind Rudy Gay, you know, as that number three stretch four-man role in small lineups coming off the bench in the second quarter. Now, as far as Kufos goes, this is a hand pick of George Karl. Played with him with the Nuggets, so he knows them. He's familiar with them. Came up in early in his career with Karl and the Nuggets. So I know Karl knows him and he likes him. I think he trusts him to be a solid contributor. And I do actually think that barring some crazy Willie Cauley-Stein training camp or preseason where he just lights the NBA on fire, Kufos will probably open the season the starter and let Willie Cauley-Stein get integrated. And once Cauley-Stein flashes some talent or the Kings lose a string of games, then you'll see Cauley-Stein enter the starting lineup. I think Cauley-Stein probably starts something like 60-ish games is what I would think. Maybe 60, 65 games there.
Okay.
So Kufos will be in there. Kings will lose some games. They'll get beat, you know. And Kufos is actually not a bad guy to pair Cousins with, because I always thought Cousins was more of a natural four than a five, but he can play either one. No one bullies Cousins inside, so he plays great as a center, but he makes a lot more sense as a four because of the number of jump shots that he shoots to have somebody down low clean up any rebounds or any shots that are missed, which is amazing considering the amount of rebounding that Cousins does. Given the amount of, you know, 15, 18-foot jumpers he takes there as well. So either guy, Cauley-Stein or Kufos, would be a good fit as a rim protector and a rebounder-only guy. But we both know that Kufos doesn't have elite talent. Probably shouldn't be starting for anyone, basically, there. But is a nice bench-step guy who got overpaid by Sacramento because they needed to fill talent after they emptied the clip on their roster in order to try to get Wesley Matthews. So he makes sense. He fits. He's a rotation guy. He's not a fantasy guy. He needs a haircut.
There you go. Yep. He's a guy that's going to give you, 7.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, a block, a decent field goal percentage. He's not a good free throw shooter, but he's not going to have relevance really for most fantasy. Look, if you go to a 14-team league, then Kufos is a guy that we can look at and consider there. And I think that you're right. He will start the season. He may end up ceding his spot to Cauley-Stein at some point. And I'm 100% with you that DeMarcus Cousins is going to play four this season and Kufos will play five. Not that the distinction matters a huge amount, but I think that's the way that they'll do it. Do you think the Kufos impacts Cousins' numbers at all?
Maybe slightly from a rebounding perspective, because he's a fairly decent rebounder and he'll be hanging around the rim. But, you know, Cousins is so active and he'll play 38, 39 minutes so often. So I don't think it'll be something that like negatively impacts you in a good way, in a huge way. So if he comes down from like 11.9 per game or whatever it was last season to, you know, 10.9 or 10.7 or something, you lose a rebound. It's not going to kill you one way or the other. You're not drafting Cousins to be, you know, to hit 12 rebounds a game. You're drafting him because he's a stat stuffer who shoots a great percentage from the free throw line and, you know, is a potential triple-double threat. So that's the way that I'm looking at there. So I think there's going to be one way or another between Cauley-Stein or Kufos, you're going to see a sort of a rebounding downtick in Cousins, but you may see like some increased offensive efficiency from the double teams that aren't going to necessarily come his way, having another legitimate big man down there, you know, besides, you know, Jason Thompson and the other and Chuck Hayes. And, you know, I mean, I love Chuck Hayes for Hayes, but you know, he's not a threat to anybody. And the Carl Landry, who I think, you know, is another guy who would just be absolutely ignored in fantasy leagues. So, yeah, that's – and having said that, just to touch one more time on Kufos too, if you're in that deep of a league where you're considering rostering Kufos because a starter at center should be owned in that sort of league, then I would want to pair him with Willie Cauley-Stein. in my roster. So you get to that point where you draft Kufis or Willie Cauley-Stein. Probably Willie Cauley-Stein goes before Kufos because of the name recognition and the first round draft pick and the potential to start until that lineup starting lineup is settled. I would probably want to own both if you're in that deep of a league. So if it flip flops or for whatever reason Cauley-Stein takes longer to get into the starting lineup, you have the share of whatever happens throughout the season.
I think that's all pretty accurate. We're going to touch on a couple of those guys a little bit later. Let's talk about some of the guys who left just briefly. Jason Thompson, Carl Landry have both gone, which you alluded to. Andre Miller has gone to Minnesota. Ray McCallum was stolen by the Spurs for a second-round draft choice. Derek Williams is gone. Reggie Evans is gone. Nick Stauskas is part of that trade to open up cap space and costing them first-round draft picks and first-round draft swaps. And Ryan Hollins has gone. Who's the biggest loss, do you say, out of that group? Or nobody, you don't care that any of them are gone?
I'm sorry, did you mention somebody relevant in that list?
That's, the only guy I'd be considering is Stauskas, maybe for future potential, but he wasn't going to have much of an impact on this team anyway with McLemore there, with Collison there. He wasn't going to have a huge impact, but he's the only... Everyone else, Derek Williams is garbage, Carl Landry, Jason Thompson, Andre Miller's 140 years old. Ray McCallum definitely has potential, but who knows what that was going to turn into. And Reggie Evans and Ryan Hollins, I probably don't need to say their names again. Let's talk.
Yeah, they're all replacement level in my mind. Yeah. Carlson or McCallum has the potential to have that Corey Joseph type role and sort of impact with 25 points per game. And we know how injury prone Tony Parker is, so he's probably the guy with the most upside. If Stauskas somehow snaps off a starting, two guard gig, or something to that effect, or or ends up getting 25 minutes off the bench, I could see him as an option. In deep leagues, does have a good basketball IQ, but is also a defensive liability. But, there's offensive potential there. And if Okafor didn't get drafted in Philadelphia, then Jason Thompson might actually be potentially interesting.
Thompson's in Golden State now.
Oh, that's right. He got he scratched the golden lottery ticket, right? Yeah. He's just like, let me go win a championship one time in Golden State. Yeah, so nicely done.
He's taking Jason Thompson. David Lee role.
Yeah. David Lee role. Oh, you mean resident water boy, towel waver?
10 minutes a game, 15 minutes a game.
Or more famously known as the guy who squirts water in Steph Curry's mouth when he comes off the off the court during timeouts.
That's it's a pretty good job if you can get paid to sit there and win a title.
Sure. Yeah, it's like make sure all seven of your buttons are buttoned up on your warm-ups, each game because they're probably not coming off. So, yeah, it's great. I love that. Perfect.
Let's talk about draft choices. Oh, go ahead. You got something else to add?
I'm just going to say, none of those guys are relevant at all. And, if I had to pick one out of there, it's Ray McCallum. But that just shows you how bad of a back-end roster and some of the problems that have just been illustrated by Sacramento. When you kick that many guys off your roster and the rest of the league doesn't even want half of them.
Some of them got overpaid, like Derek Williams. Landry and Thompson, they're going to do what they do. McCallum's going to be a third guard behind Parker and Patty Mills. There's not a lot of talent there. Let's talk draft picks now. Especially, we talk a little bit about for this season, but for any dynasty leagues, if we know anything about them. But there's not many draft picks on this team from the last two seasons, which is where I want to really focus. They got Arturas Gueditis and Luka Mitrovic in that trade with Philadelphia. They're not going to play this season. They're overseas. I don't know a huge amount about them. I don't know if you've done much research and what your take on Mitrovic and Gueditis is.
I don't know enough about them personally to really discuss them at length overall, but from what I've been told, they're not even top level prospects there as well. If they were any sort of like decent prospect that had a chance to like be a starter or even crack rotation for Philadelphia, they don't make that move in that trade. It was a clear salary dump on guys who might not even come back over, having the trade rights there. So usually when guys come over from overseas, they want some sort of like guarantee that they're the ownership or the organization is committed to them and actually, you know, developing them, playing them in the organization, sort of the way that Thiago Splitter waited a couple years to come over. And then when he was EuroLeague MVP and the Spurs had a fit for him next to Tim Duncan, that made some sort of sense, but they waited. So that's like the absolute best case scenario. But none of these guys are even close to Thiago Splitter's pedigree. They're throw-ins, and they don't necessarily even matter if they come over, in my mind.
Yeah, so. They're not. Look, Mitrovic was the last pick in the draft. There's not a huge amount there, so we don't need to worry about them. I'm not even drafting and stashing them in Dynasty or anything like that. Willie Cauley-Stein is a guy that is going to have interest. He's going to have interest. This season, people are going to be looking at him because they like the name. They like that he can do the... He doesn't do flashy plays, but a block, you can call blocking shots as a flashy play. People like seeing it. They love seeing it on highlights, the big, you know, smash of the ball out of bounds, you know, smash it off the backboard, whatever they do. He's super athletic. We know he's got great defense. He can go out and attack guys, you know, bringing the ball up at the three-point line, all that sort of stuff. But as with most rookies, he's going to be overdrafted. I think there's almost no issue with predicting that. He's ranked outside the top 200. On Basketball Monster. It's just, I don't see it from him. I don't see what he's going to be able to do. Look, he's going to be a guy where you can go, I need blocks, and I'm going to add him in for 2 days or a day or something like that. Or if, you know, Cousins gets injured and he's forced into 34 minutes a game. But his offensive game is so limited, he's going to be, only be able to take shots close to the basket. They're not going to be looking for him. He's going to be almost Bismack Biyombo style, invisible on offense. He doesn't shoot free throws well. He'll get some steals, he'll get some rebounds, but even his rebounding, he's not as good a rebounder as what Kufos is. All he's going to be able to provide is blocks, and we just don't know how many minutes he's going to get. I've got him projected currently at about 20 minutes a game. That could easily change, but we see young players, not many young players get in and play big minutes. Now, I was looking at, which I've got a piece that'll come out on Basketball Monster soon talking about rookie previews, and I was looking at rookie big men, and over the past 25 seasons, Josh, how many rookie centers do you think have played over 32 minutes a game?
I don't see you there. I don't know if Duncan even counts because he's a power forward when he came up as a rookie paired with David Robinson. I want to say like five or less.
Yeah, it was five. It was like Shaq, Shaq Mutombo, Dwight Howard, I think, and two other guys. And Cauley-Stein's not Shaq. He's not Mutombo. He's not going to play 35 minutes or 32 minutes. In comparison, I think I looked at rookie guards over that time frame, and 39 of them had played 32 minutes. It's a big discrepancy. Big men just take so long to really get going. He's not going to play minutes where he's going to get 30 minutes. And even if he got 30 minutes, that'd put him at maybe 9.7 rebounds, 1.5 blocks. It's not exciting numbers. He's way outside of standard league consideration for me. For dynasty leagues, yeah, but again, I reckon you're going to have to wait 2 or 3 years for it to really come to fruition, maybe 2 seasons, but he's not going to be a guy who's going to go, yeah, next season, Willie Cauley-Stein's going to play 35 minutes, he's going to do all this stuff. He's going to be a big work in progress in my mind. I don't hate the pick when they made it, but I just, for fantasy, I'm leaving that alone unless it's a streaming basis.
I'm not feeling the Sacramento Kings love from you, Josh. I have to be honest with you there. It feels like a lot of negativity going on this show. I feel like we should have some sad music playing in the background.
No, there's going to be some positivity coming soon. Don't worry. There's a couple of guys that I am really excited about.
Willie Cauley-Stein, but there was just like it was Willie Cauley-Stein just got ran over basically by in your 2015-16 season projection. I don't know how good he feels about that personally.
I'm sure he's hanging to every word that I say just to hear my projection on him. But do you see it differently? Do you think that he's going to be someone who impacts leagues this year?
For the first month of the season, I think a lot of people who drafted him will be if it happens like we think it's going to happen, he'll probably get dropped in redraft leagues because you'll see Kufos start and you won't be happy with his minutes or production, and he's not a big offensive guy. So you're right about all that stuff. Having said that, even in the deeper 12 team leagues that I play, somebody who starts at center, if he ends up taking the job from Kufos like we think he does, will end up being relevant because of the skills that he has. If he takes a starter's job and can push for like 28 minutes in the first season, not necessarily likely, but if that happens, then you have like a Tyson Chandler light situation there. And Chandler gets owned in every league. Yeah. You know, he's not sexy and he doesn't perform terribly well on the offensive end, but he blocks a lot of shots. And you know, the field goal percentage is going to be good because it's all putbacks and dunks there as well. And so if you can get rebounds and blocks, just one thing to consider here. Think about this in your redraft leagues about how hard it was to get blocks off the waiver wire in a lot of your leagues. It was almost impossible. Everybody who blocked any number of shots, like as a serious volume shot blocker, was basically owned. You couldn't really find it on the waiver wire. So if that happens, then he has value for 2015, 2016. Aside from that, I basically agree with you there as well. Big men take a long time to develop, and he probably more than likely is not going to have a significant role in 2015. Having said that, they're not going to ask him to do what other centers, you know, do when they get drafted, you know, like Jahlil Okafor and Karl Anthony Towns, for example. There's a lot more pressure for them to produce on both ends. There's no pressure for Willie College Stein.
That's true.
They just want him to come in and just block shots and play D. Let Cousins and Rudy Gay handle the offense and Rondo handle the ball. And they give you the ball, put it in, like, dunk it, put it back. You know what I mean? So he may be able to like transition a little bit more seamlessly than we think, but you're still not going to be super excited about the fantasy value. But having said that, I think there's maybe it's not this year, but there's some DeAndre Jordan in there. There's some Tyson Chandler in there, you know, as in terms of skill set. The other thing that you have to consider too is that Ranadive is a psycho. Okay, if he sees Kufos out there and they're losing games over and over, he's going to push George Karl and the organization and Vlade to say, listen, play Willie Cauley-Stein, play the rookie. This guy's got to be better than Kufos out there. So he may get pushed into a role just on the amount of pressure that Ranadive and ownership will want to see him out there as their basically their prize free agent edition or draft edition. I think he's probably a bigger name and could be potentially more important than Rondo or anybody else they sign. So something to keep in mind.
I don't think I'm going to be going anywhere near him in any redraft leagues outside of, say, 14 teams. Even probably then I wouldn't go. But Dynasty, there's a different situation for him now. We did have a lot of questions come in about Cauley-Stein, which I think we've covered a little bit now. We'll touch on them a little bit later. But there's one question here that came in from Charles Oakley. I don't think it's the Charles Oakley. Charles Oakley, wow. on the Basketball Monster message. But I'm going to hope it is. Let's just say it is Charles Oakley. So thank you, Charles, for your question.
It's an honor, Mr. Oakley.
He's big into his Dynasty fantasy leagues.
Yeah. Don't hack us. All right. We're just going to shoot from the outside. We don't need to get, you know, chopped down in the lane like he's famous for. So, yeah.
Well, let's see what his question is. Where do you rank Willie Cauley-Stein in a rookie draft? So I assume that's a Dynasty league. We're drafting only rookies. Where does he sit for you in that sort of format?
Back end of the first round, probably. I would say.
I'd say that's about right.
Yeah, Towns obviously is going before him, Russell, Okafor. I actually like Miles Turner in terms of offense more than Cauley-Stein, a guy who got drafted behind them, and Kings were actually thinking about drafting in there that spot. So there's a few other guys. Who am I missing?
Porzingis, Moutier.
Yeah, Moutier for sure is going to play 35 minutes and turn the ball over a ton of times, but will still have fantasy value as a – you know, as a poor man's Ty Lawson. So there's that. So somewhere 7 through 12, 8 through 12.
Yeah, I'll probably have him at 8. Like, I think Frank Kaminsky is going to have probably more value because of more, not that he's going to be a better player, but more of what he does. He's going to be able to hit threes. He's probably going to have a bigger role for the majority of this season. A couple of guys in Dynasty Leagues that I am really excited about in terms of not because of what they're going to do this year, but for 2 or 3 years down the track is DeLon Wright and Cameron Payne, who project out really, really well in terms of their numbers if they're to get a bigger role. That's all about balancing how you want to look at it. Am I drafting my dynasty team for 3 years' time? Because that's when Payne and Wright are really going to start to kick it in. When Lowry's aged in Toronto and he might get dealt, DeRozan might go, and then he becomes a starter there. Cameron Payne will, you know, at the end of his rookie deal, he might get traded Reggie Jackson style. Russell Westbrook may leave, and then he gets a bigger role. But they're guys who project out really well. Whereas Cauley-Stein I don't really even see him becoming a Tyson Chandler because he doesn't even have the ability to necessarily finish at the rim like Chandler does. I know Chandler does a lot of dunks, but Cauley-Stein's not as big, he's not as strong as what Chandler is. That's going to impact it as well. I don't imagine him ever having that 60-plus field goal percentage. He's going to be a better shot blocker, so he's going to have value there. But I don't know. I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to be good at what he does, but it's going to be probably limited to a two-category fantasy guy. Blocks and rebounds, and even then, those rebounds, he needs to get better at doing that. Now,
I would say field goal percentage. I would say throw in there because
it won't be this season. He's not getting 50% this season. Don't count on that. There's no chance of him getting 50 this season.
I would side bet you on that right now.
Really?
Yes, that he doesn't shoot 50% from the field.
Yeah, I don't think he shoots 50%.
What is he going to do? He's the only shot he's going to take is a layup or a dunk.
Yeah, he can't even hit layups.
50% of those.
He can't hit layups. I was there. I watched him at Summer League. He couldn't hit a layup, like wide open layups. And I was like, what is going on with this guy? He was just, and against nobodies, he couldn't hit layups. And I don't even know what his, which I'm going to look up his Summer League stats, and he's going to say he shot 75% from the field, and I'm going to look like an idiot. But he just missed a stack of shots.
I think your sample's too small. I mean, in college, he improves his field goal percentage season over season, and he actually improves his free throw percentage well. He's a hard worker, so
he is. You know. I don't hate him or anything like that. I don't think he's terrible. I don't think it was a bad pick, but I think his fantasy value is a little bit limited. He shot 51% in Summer League, so there you go. So I'm wrong. So maybe he is going to be a 50% shooter. I just don't see it. We'll see at the end of the season. We'll definitely have a discussion on Willie Cauley-Stein's field goal percentage. Let's talk breakout players now. So the way I've been framing this question to other people is a player who goes from being a good player to being a great player, or a player who goes from being, you know, an average, irrelevant sort of player to a nice role player. The guy I've got listed here in this one, Josh, is Ben McLemore. I am big on him. I think that he's shown me a lot in the last couple of seasons, really starting to pick up what he's able to do. The second half of last season, he improved a lot as well. He was quite a handy player towards the end of last season. I really liked what he was able to do. How do you see McLemore? Are you as high on him as what I am? I think that he can become quite a good player for this team.
Well, I think it's going to largely depend on how he fits into the offense with George Call. I think there's definitely potential, but there's also some worry there because there's pressure behind him. There's pressure from Darren Collison, who they promised two guard minutes to, which I don't necessarily buy personally because, like I said, it'll probably stunt Ben McLemore's growth. But we've seen McLemore get benched throughout last season in the past for poor play or, you know, getting beat on defense. And that's the other thing too, is he is actually a very active defender and he hustles and he can get you chase down blocks. And, you know, he's like pretty useful from like a fantasy perspective, but like in terms of defensive metrics, he ranks in the bottom five every season. And maybe that's just more of a function of the Sacramento Kings as a whole, not being a great defensive team and not having a big man like Cousins, because Cousins is not a traditional shot blocker from Ben. He's not a bad shot blocker, but he's not the cleanup DeAndre Jordan, you know, Tyson Chandler, you know, real solid rim protector that a lot of these teams have, you know. So I think that sort of hurt him a little bit, but he just hasn't advanced enough on defense for him to be, you know, even league average at this point. So that's going to be part of it. And I think, you know, Kufus and Willie Cauley-Stein can probably help him in that area. But the biggest thing that Ben McLemore needs to do is he needs to raise his 3-point percentage again this year. He did it last year and he needs to take it over to the next level to get in consistent low 42, 43% range there as well. So I love the fact that he worked hard on his shot. He has a lot of ability. He can shoot it and you can shoot it from deep. He has a nice consistent stroke, but he's got to make more of these shots. He's got to knock down some more of these contested threes and he needs to get himself into the 40 plus percent range so he doesn't get taken off the court for Marco Bellinelli or, Darren Collison in that aspect there. If he can do that and improve himself in that, in terms of overall shooting, he has the overall athletic ability and, you know, on the defensive and the offensive side of the ball, stay on the court for 35 plus minutes and be a factor. I actually think his ceiling, best case scenario, maybe not this year, but, you know, could be this year, could be next year, is like a Wesley Matthews type, where you never see him score like 30 points a game, but he hits a ton of threes and he's active on both ends of the floor, rebounds, does all the little things that you love as like an eighth round pick in a fantasy.
You said you don't want him to get taken off the floor for Bellinelli, but Bellinelli's not a guy who shoots 40% from three. McLemore, this is what impressed me about McLemore, okay? Now, this is small sample size, but over the last week of the season, he played 36 minutes. All right, 18 points, almost 2.5 threes, 5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 2 steals, 46% from the field he shot. And that's only 4 games, but that's fine. The last 2 weeks, he was at 16.5, 2 threes, 3.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 2 steals, 48 and 75. He improved his stats across the board. He played 6 more minutes. He jumped his points per game up by 4. He hit an extra half a 3. He got an extra 0.7 assists. He doubled his steal numbers. He went from 38 to 44 from the field. He went from 80 to 81 from the free throw line. His threes went from 32 to 36. They're all really positive indicators for me that he improved everything. Every stat category got better. He was trusted more. I think that we saw that what he was doing, he wasn't impacted by the arrival of George Karl. He still played basically the same as he'd played all year. There was a question that came in on the forums at Basketball Monster from Rock Chalk saying, where do you see McLemore ending up value-wise? Do you see him becoming more than a three-point specialist? And I do. This is a guy I always reference, but he's not Nick Young. He's not a guy who goes out there and hits threes and gets 1 assist and 1 rebound and 0.1 steals or something like that. He can actually rebound the ball pretty aggressively. He's a decent passer. He's not a great passer, but he's a 3 assist a game sort of guy. He can maybe push it to 3.5. And he is a good guy with steals. He did get a steal a game last year, ramped that up in the second half of the season. I think that he's a great pick towards the end of the draft. I think that he's a guy that you can not rely on, but I've taken him in a couple of leagues in those last couple of rounds. I think that he can be a guy that finishes, he could finish inside the top 100, and when you're picking outside the top 100, that's what you want a guy to do. So taking him anywhere around that 120 to 150 mark is probably the right spot for him, but I think there's a lot of potential for him to actually get better and go into the top 100. Now, I am worried about the presence of Ballinelli and Collison, not in terms of taking his job, but maybe stunting his ability to go from 32 minutes to 35 minutes or something like that. I think it probably keeps him at that 31 to 32 minute range. But I think that we see another improvement from McLemore. So you said I was being negative on the Kings. I really like McLemore. I think that he's a guy that can improve significantly.
All right. I think we could change from sad music back over to, party time music. McLemore, hey. Josh Lloyd loves him. So where are you going to get your McLemore tattoo? Are you going to go like cross the back of the shoulder blade
forehead,
or like a calf picture of his face?
No, just across my forehead.
Shoulder.
Right across
your forehead. Just Mac, M-A-C. Boom.
Just right,
wow,
right across
that'll
there.
Look good.
Yeah, and then I'll get a picture of his face behind my ear.
You know what's cool about that is like no one will foul you when you're playing pickup ball if you've got MAC across the forehead. There's like a good chance somebody thinks they're going to die if they foul you.
Yeah,
intimidating. Yeah, exactly. It was like, man, I wonder how many times this guy's been to prison. This is amazing. He's on my team, so I don't have to fight him
or
guard him.
Until they see me shooting and not one shot goes in and they go, this guy can go. We've had it no matter.
Doesn't matter. You're the enforcer.
Reggie Evans.
You're on the court. You're the Charles Oakley on the team. You're going to just chop some dudes down and nobody's going to say anything about it.
Who's your breakout candidate for this team?
Breakout candidate. Okay, this is weird, but I say Rajon Rondo, just on volume and opportunity. Okay, I mean, I think I'm with you. Ben McLemore is going to take a step up, but you're not going to be like blown away by what you get from him. It's going to be like, oh, he went to 14, 16 points a game, and maybe he's shooting 40% from three, but there's just too many shots that are going to go around to Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins. There's just so much volume that are involved in those guys, and deservedly so, because those are the two best scorers on the team. For Ben McLemore to truly have the breakout season that people would like him to have, if he does do that, it's going to be because he stuffs the stat sheet on all the rest of the other categories, because he's not going to get a lot more shots than he's getting right now, in my opinion. So I'm going to give it to Rajon Rondo. Everybody hates this guy. Nobody wants to draft him. You probably can safely get him outside of round 10 in most leagues there. And he's still going to be a triple-double threat. And I think he's going to play 30 to 35 minutes there as well. And I'm not saying that he's going to all of a sudden become a great shooter, but I bet you he can get back to the 60% range from the free throw line.
I agree with that.
And sort of get back to that potential triple double threat that he used to be. We're racking up more steals and putting up 10 assists per game, because there's going to be a lot of easy buckets when you feed the ball down low to DeMarcus Cousins and you find Rudy Gay in the right spots. And if Ben McLemore levels his game like you think he's going to, then he should be able to turn more of those passes into assists for Rajon Rondo too, if he hits his shots from outside.
So is it safe to say that when we talk sleeper players for this team, that Rondo is your guy? You think he's going to be a bit of a late round sleeper, or do you just have someone based else in
on mind? Yeah, well, no, it's going to have to be Rondo, because there's just not enough guys that are going to get enough opportunity. You're really down to Rudy Gay can't count as a sleeper because he's a top 50 player ish, and you know DeMarcus Cousins is a first rounder. Okay, so then you're down to Ben McLemore, Willie Cauley-Stein, who we've already covered, and Kufos, who doesn't qualify, or Rajon Rondo. And I don't think you can ever really take a look at. They have no super sub on their team that like plays 20 something minutes but really is good enough to be a starter on somebody else's team. There's none of that there. So it's really down to Ben McLemore and Rajon Rondo, and Rondo is going to handle the ball a lot more. So he's the candidate that makes the most sense to me.
So I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, saying there's no super sub. I think Darren Collison can be that guy. I think that he can be that guy who plays 26 minutes off the bench. I've got him projected to be just inside the top 100 at the moment, even at those limited minutes. I think that he is a threat to take minutes off Rondo. I really like what Collison did there last season. I'd be pissed if I was him that after the great play that he put in last season, they went and got Rondo, who, by pretty much any measure that you could put out there, was worse than what Collison was last season. Collison was really, really good. He's shown now over the last two seasons that he can actually play. Even when he was in Los Angeles with the Clippers as a backup to Chris Paul, he put up big numbers. He started next to Chris Paul when Jamal Crawford was out, put up good numbers there as well, was fantastic in Sacramento. I think that he is a real threat to take minutes off Rondo. He's going to take a couple off McLemore as well, and he will be that like Isaiah Thomas guy that plays that scoring threat off the bench, the six man role. I think that he is going to be a nice guy in the last round of a draft, because there's a chance that it goes horribly wrong with Rondo and Collison becomes a starter. But even if it doesn't, even if he gets 25 to 26 minutes, he can still contribute enough. He can give you four assists, he can get a steal, a three, some nice points. He's a really good percentage guy as well. He shot 47% from the field, and point guards don't do that. And you also don't find guys at that part of the draft who are guards who shoot high percentages. So I think he's going to be a guy who can exceed his draft spot by a couple of rounds at the end. And I think that he's definitely worth looking at that now. In terms of losers, guys who I think are going to be overvalued heading into drafts, well, Bellinelli's currently got the same ADP as what Collison does at 134, and to me that's not on. Bellinelli's not a standard league guy, and we're going to disagree here, but Willie Cauley-Stein has an ADP of 137. I understand that you're drafting for potential and you think that something's going to happen, but I would rather take Collison at that spot than Cauley-Stein at 137. To me, that's not going to work out. You're going to be 2 months of sitting on someone who's going to be useless pretty much.
Yeah, Willie Cauley-Stein is going to be a nice free agent pickup or a bench stash if you're in an 82 game cap or you don't get burned by stashing people, or like you said, in dynasty leagues there. But if you know you're in a daily league where you can play everybody in your bench with like, you know, unlimited game caps, or you know, or a really high minutes cap for your league or something like that, it's going to be really tough for you to, you know, swallow that, unless you somehow he wins the job out of training camp, which I'm not necessarily concerned about. But it is Kostas Kufos that we're talking about, so it's possible,
definitely.
I will say this about Darren Collison really quickly, though. There, you know, do you tell me which is the more likely scenario? Okay, Darren Collison taking his ADP, what in the 130s,
134
right now. 134 and putting himself in the top 100, which is certainly possible. I can all those points that you mentioned are valid. I'm on team Darren Collison there as well. He could be, you know, right around 100, top 100 player ish, or Rajon Rondo getting a full complement of minutes, you know, because he's got paid the contract and the Kings are fully invested in him and they need him to sort of create any sort of level of success that the Kings are hoping that they're going to have in 2015. And taking his 10th round ADP, is that my right? 10th roundish.
His ADP is 98 at the moment.
98, yeah, okay. So yeah, 10th roundish, top 100, and putting himself into top 50 conversation with, you know, leading the league in assists. And I mean, back when Rajon Rondo was at his peak in Boston, he was a top 50 player. That's five rounds, you know. So which is more likely to in your mind?
To me,
I think it's more it's Rondo.
To me, it's not close. It's not close that it's Collison to me in that situation. I don't see. Look, yeah, he could be a top 50 guy. I just don't see it happening. I could be proven wrong. I think the injuries have slowed him down significantly. The percentages are going to be a concern. Collison's probably going to score more than him, hit more threes, shoot better percentages, equal
you're
steals.
Assuming that Collison's going to play like, you know, like 20 something minutes. There could be nights where, you know, he comes up and he's like a 16 minute guy.
I would rather take Collison 40 spots later than where you're going to have to take Rondo than take Rondo at pick 90. I don't see the likelihood of him becoming a top 50 guy. Look, it could happen, and you know things obviously happen that I don't agree.
It's Sacramento. There's going to be a lot of points put on the board. It's not a great defensive team, so there's going to be a lot of there's probably be more possessions and a lot of the, you remember taking a look at the totals too when you're like you know yep. look at these
That's
games
true.
Every day there. Sacramento is one of the top total teams all the time because, I mean, they don't defend well, and they should defend better with Cauley Stein. But having said that, there's going to be a lot of possessions out there, so there's going to be more fantasy stacks, which is why Cousins is always usually a good bet. They need him to score so much because they can't stop anybody else on the defensive end. You're going to have that sort of benefit from Rondo there as well. So I just don't see how they pay him $10 million and still let Collison – eat him down to like 29 minutes a game or something the way they did in Dallas. You know, Dallas and Rick Carlisle, that was like sort of a function of him like, listen, we're running the offense differently than you're used to. It's Monte Ellis who's going to be a facilitator, and we want Dirk to touch the ball, and, you know, and we have other scorers on this team, and you're sort of going to need to fit in the role. I think they're giving the keys to Rondo, and they're going to let him run it. And then that's what they paid him $10 million for. If Darren Collison cuts into that and marginalizes him, I'll be surprised.
All right,
I think he's going to have a role, but I don't know if it's 25 minutes. That's all I'm saying.
We'll see how that all works out over the next few months. One guy we haven't spoken about is Rudy Gay, who I think is really underrated from a fantasy point of view, especially in a roto league. I think he's a top 20 guy for a roto league. He's probably not quite as valuable in head-to-head leagues. He's currently got an ADP sitting at 43. I think that getting him at 43 is pretty good. He's put up significant value. He is a top 30 guy. He was just incredible down the stretch. He was a top 20 guy from the last half of last season. He does everything. He's got a close to a triple one guy in that he can get a three, a steal, and a block a game. He gets decent assists, nice rebounds, good points. You know, percentages are not Rudy Gay of old. We're not talking 40% from the field 30, anymore.
39.
He was, yeah. You know, he's probably a 45, 84 sort of guy, which are great. He's a fantastic roto player. And if you can get him at pick 40 in a roto league, it's a massive, massive steal. He is a top 20 roto guy. Almost no doubt in my mind that he is going to be that good again. So the head-to-head drops a little bit, but it's not easy to get small forwards. There's not that many small forwards around that are good. And he is a guy that, again, third round, I'm more than happy to take. I think that he has been fantastic in Sacramento. You would have watched him a lot more probably than what I have in Sacramento, but he has been fantastic. Do you have anything negative to say about Rudy Gay and his fantasy value?
I do.
Okay.
Believe it or not, being a Sacramento homer, so it pains me to say this, but some of Rudy Gay's biggest games that he had last season came with DeMarcus Cousins out of the lineup. And we know DeMarcus Cousins missed a handful of games there, so that's a good thing and a bad thing, you know. But I don't think you should necessarily like bank on DeMarcus Cousins having viral meningitis again, or anything like that. He's been pretty durable overall, and he's tried to play even when he shouldn't be playing in the lineup there. Like the first game back from viral meningitis, he should have been playing something like 25 minutes. He played like 40 because he wouldn't take himself out of the game. You could tell he was like way out of shape, but the Kings were trying so hard to win that game. I think that was one of George Karl's first games as head coach. And, you know, so there's that piece of it. Rudy Gay, you know, his best volume and his best level of production came when he was asked to be the man. And the other thing too is like him and Cousins don't necessarily get along. If you watch them on the court, they quite often jaw at each other and disagree and get upset about who has done what on the floor, or where each other person, or why the person didn't give up the ball in certain spots. So they're not the greatest of fits in terms of like team chemistry, but they still put up great fantasy points. And I think at worst, rather than, you know, benefiting from him being a top 20 player, I think he's safely in the top 30. And if you draft him, you know, like you said, third round, or if you get him at the ADP of 43 or well, you're still getting a full round of value. So there's that. And then on the upside of that as well, I think he's going to get better shots overall delivered to him by Rajon Rondo. This is the first time that either player has had a legitimate pass first point guard. Even with the great season that Darren Collison had last year, the assist numbers were still below league average. There's one. That's the one knock that you have on Darren Collison for all the great things that he does as an overall point guard. He's not a great like assist generator or distributor overall. He'll get Cousins the ball in the spots, but then Cousins will have to do the work himself. Back the guy down the post, get in the point in the paint. And that's sort of a result of the type of offense that they run. But you're going to probably see that DeMarcus Cousins and Rudy Gay are going to get better shots in the offense this season, and I think that's going to be a benefit to their fantasy value.
I would agree with that as well. I think that they are going to have some pretty handy seasons, both those guys. Now let's move on to the end of this show. A couple of questions that I'm throwing out to all the guys who are coming on this show, Josh, is who's your favorite player on this current team?
Sacramento?
Yep.
Oh, man. Well, Cousins is the easy answer for me there. I've always just been secretly rooting for Ben McLemore to get to, the LeBron James type of potential that he talked about, you know, him being a steal with a pick in there in the draft. I want to see Ben McLemore get to Wesley Matthews' level or close to a poor man's Wesley Matthews. If he does that, then that's going to be my guy for me. So,
okay.
I think he has a chance, like you say, to be a do it all type of guy, but I'm going to change my answer just a little bit. I'm going to say Rudy Gay. Rudy Gay he's not the best player on that team, but, he could end up being the most valuable fantasy player in terms of where you drafted him versus what he produces for you.
Yeah,
you draft Cousins in the first round, you got first round value.
Yep.
If you draft anybody else, you're probably getting somewhere close to the value that you derived, unless, like we said, Rajon Rondo goes nuts or Ben McLemore really breaks out, which probably are less than likely scenarios. But I think Rudy Gay is as solid and safe as anybody in that league. And a lot of people don't necessarily look at him because, you know, Sacramento Kings aren't necessarily popular fantasy picks aside from Cousins.
Yeah, if you pick him in the 40s, I think that's significant value to get him there, because he's better than a player that's mid 40s. Now, the next question is more important, Josh, is who's your favorite all-time player for this team?
Favorite all-time player? Oh, man. I love C-Webb. Love C-Webb for sure. There's so many. You know, I mean, that sounds weird saying it as a Kings fan too, but it's I'm really torn between C-Webb and Peja Stojakovic. I think I'm going to have to go with Peja. Peja was like one of my all-time favorite players. I loved it. Like, he just got drafted like in the back end, or I forget, the middle of the first round. Jeff Petrie was the like one of the pioneers of pulling people from Europe that no one had ever heard of, and watching these guys just absolutely kill. I mean, he did it with Stojakovic. He did it with Hito Turkoglu. You know, he traded for Vlade, who obviously, you know, was drafted by a different team, but when people thought that Vlade was done in that team. And so he had a lot of trust in European talent, and they meshed perfectly in that offense. So I'm going to go Peja with C-Webb as a very, 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 very close honorable mention. But I'm a shooter, so I always felt like great, and I always wanted to be Peja, you know, shooting threes for the Sacramento Kings. So
Peja had some crazy 3-point shooting seasons throughout his career. He hit three threes a game twice in his career, so many seasons of over two. He hit over 40% of his threes for, I'm just going to add this up, eight of his 13 seasons in the NBA. He hit over 40% of his threes. He had a high of 44% in the 07-08 season when he was playing for the New Orleans Hornets at the time. But some of those numbers for Sacramento, he was a 20-point guy with two threes a game. He'd get over a steal a game. His field goal percentage was awesome. He was like a 48 and 88 guy from the field and from the line, including 40 from three. He was putting up some crazy, crazy numbers.
Maybe I'm wrong in quoting this, but I feel like there was one season where he was like third in MVP voting. Is that wrong? Is that like completely off base?
No, I don't remember, but I'm looking at his numbers. I would say the 03-04 season when he went 24 points, three threes a game. He got 6 rebounds, 1.3 steals. He shot 48 and 93 from the line. I would say that if it was going to be any season, it was that. He was actually the second-ranked fantasy player for that season. I would say that that wouldn't be crazy to think that he was that high in MVP voting that season. He was really, really good in that year.
I want to look up the 2003-2004 MVP voting and see where he was, because I think there was one season I was like, nobody's going to remember this. Nobody's going to remember that he had this crazy of a season. He was like actually almost better than Weber, or maybe he was better than Weber on that team in that season. Yeah. So that's one of the, and it just kills me too, because as great of a regular season he had, he was absolute garbage in the playoffs there as well. Couldn't make a shot in the playoffs. He had so many open looks, and you know, he ended up just costing them that playoff series there. So Pedro Stojakovic finished fourth in that league behind Jermaine O'Neal, believe it or not, and Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett won that season. So yeah, fourth in the 2004 NBA MVP voting. So yeah, people won't remember that, but he was really good for a short period of time.
That's really interesting.
At that elite MVP level.
Now, the guy I have is my favorite all-time. My favorite current player is Boogie, but all-time Sacramento Kings guy, it's Mitch Richmond. I was a big fan of him from when he was at the Warriors and to the Kings. And something that I'm looking at his numbers now shocks me a little bit is his first 10 seasons in the NBA, he averaged over 20 points a game. That's pretty good. He was a guy that got over 4 assists and 5 assists in some seasons in his career. He racked up steal numbers. He was a consistent top 30, sort of even top 10 in some seasons fantasy guy. He was a really, really good player for a long period of time. And another guy who I had probably an unreasonable affection towards was Walt Williams. I think it was his Sox. Big fan of the big Sox from Walt Williams. He had a couple of good seasons. It didn't really last a huge amount of time, but he was someone who I was always interested in watching play. So he's my guy. Now we're almost done with this show, Josh. We just had a couple more questions come in through the Basketball Monster forum. Yeah, chances that Cousins gets moved at some point this season. That's from Silent Jim. Do you think that he gets traded?
0%. I think it's all ridiculousness, and I think the Kings were forced into listening to some of these trade offers because of the mess that George Karl created there. But more than likely, George Karl gets fired before Cousins gets moved, in my mind. There's just no way that you saw what the Lakers offered. They offered D'Angelo Russell.
Wasn't it Russell and Randall as well was part of it?
No. They were like, you can have the number 2 pick. And the Kings were like, we need Randall, we need Russell, we need Jordan Clarkson, and we need another pick.
People don't realize how good Boogie is. Like, he's that good. Yeah. Like, he's no matter what you get back, you're never getting enough. They'd be stupid to do it.
Exactly. Even if you got those 3 players back in return, you're trading a potential Hall of Famer away.
Yep.
So yeah, the best center in the league. I love Jordan Clarkson, and I think Julius Randle is going to be an undercover beast for the Lakers, provided they give him all the power forward minutes.
I'm completely down on Randle. Not a fan of Randle at all. I'm going to be talking Lakers later this week. Yeah, not into him at all.
You'll be surprised.
We'll
see. I'm telling you. I caught some highlights of Randle when he played his last game, I think before he got injured in preseason with in Sacramento at MGM in Vegas.
Yep.
Destroyed Sacramento inside and out.
Okay.
Was handing Boogie his lunch. I was like, this is what Boogie does to people. He's like, scores inside, then takes you outside, then hits a jumper, and then you don't know how to guard him. So to me, he reminds me of a mini Zach Randolph. We'll see. It's way too early to really pass judgment on Randle, even no matter what he does this season,
because
it's essentially his rookie season again.
That's true. A couple of questions about Rondo. I think we answered one of them. One of them is from Ken Slight, who's the owner of Basketball Monster. So thanks, Ken, for that question. He says, what's the best case scenario for Rondo? You put it out there. You think top 50. I think that maybe he can be a guy who gets 10 and 10. Yeah. A double-double, 10 points, 10 assists, 1.5 steal. That's probably his upper echelon. I think his percentages, especially his free throws, come back up. You've said plenty about Rondo already. And the other question about Rondo is, how many games in before Rondo and Carl have their first blow up? That comes in from Wes Badecki. That's probably completely incorrect, so I apologize, Wes. How many games in before Rondo and Carl have their first blow up? I'm going to say it's not going to be until 2016, so sometime in January would be my guess. You?
I'll just say, you know what? I don't appreciate that question there, sir. You know, I was like, you're talking to a Kings fan here. Why can't we just keep it positive and say that they're going to get along? You know what I mean?
Maybe, let's do that.
Maybe Rondo has gone to therapy and he's righted the wrongs of his ways. You know, maybe he's a peaceful person who just wants everybody to get along. He is a point guard and he likes to assist.
That's so, possible for sure.
All right, there you have it.
All right.
So I'm just going to say it's all rainbows for 82 games.
Cool. Well, let's see how that works out. Josh, it's been fantastic having you onto the show for the first time. Thank you for making the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Great for having me on, and congratulations on the new gigs here over at Basketball Monster and Hardwood Paroxysms. How do you pronounce that?
I say paroxysm, and I think that's pretty accurate. I hope it is. I hope I haven't been saying it wrong the whole time. So welcome if you are listening on Hardwood Paroxysm as well, and check out all the other stuff that's going up there. And be prepared. There's going to be a massive season preview magazine dropped from Hardwood Paroxysm at some point in October that I am contributing to as well. So I'm looking forward to that. That's non-fantasy related. That's just NBA stuff. So that's going to be awesome. Yeah. And some of the stuff coming out of that is going to be really cool. So I'm looking forward to that. Josh, where can everyone find you again? Give us the wrap-up of where everyone can find your stuff.
Well, I'm going to put in an application in over at Hydrogen Peroxide and see if they'll take me. But if they don't, then you can find me over at RotoWire hosting the daily DFS podcasts Wednesday through Fridays. And you can find me over at Pro Football Focus with Google Hangouts that end up on YouTube. Like this very fine show yourself there for Pro Football Focus official YouTube account every Wednesday with ESPN's Renee Miller. So that's where I'll be.
Cool. So check out the stuff that Josh is doing over there, especially not only if you're a basketball guy, but if you're a football guy, the stuff that Pro Football Focus does, a lot of awesome stuff. So go and if you don't know about them, go and check them out as well. And don't forget to check out Hardwood Paroxysm and, of course, Basketball Monster. And make sure you're subscribing to this podcast and subscribing to Josh's podcast as well through iTunes. Leave us all a review. Make it glowing. Make it positive. Give us 5 stars. Tell us what you love. You can tell us what you don't love as well. That's fine. But just get a review out there, and it helps us tremendously to get the shows up in the rankings. Josh, thank you once again. It's great having you.
Thanks for having me on, Josh. I appreciate it. Looking forward to it next time. And don't forget about Willie Cauley-Stein shooting 89% from the field.
89. We'll lock it in. No problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.
See ya.